high-price Lambo or high-price muscle car? Whatever the answer, it looks like the upcoming full-tilt Z06 version of the Chevrolet Corvette is coming to Australia, and we have some opinions. Yes, it's time to strap in for another edition of the Cars Guide podcast, the show that takes you beyond the test drive. This is episode 192, Corvette Z06 is coming. I'm Cars Guide Deputy Editor James, and joining me in this shakedown of Chevy's mid-engine missile are Cars Guide Senior Journalist Richard.
Hello.
And key contributor Chesto.
Howdy.
Now, we'll also kick the tyres and slam the doors on a trio of recent entries to the Cars Guide Garage. Chesto, you're in?
Kia Stonic GT line.
Very good. And Richard?
Oh, I'm in a Lexus. It's a hybrid. It's the UX250H.
Very good. And I'll round that off with a Subaru Outback. Then we'll dive into your feedback. Now, YouTubers, if you want to plot your own adventure, you can jump ahead courtesy of the time codes in the notes below, and you can click on the chapter markers in the timeline. So let's hit the start button. So Corvette, I'm saying Z06 because it just sounds more appropriate. Feel free to say Z06 if you want to. But Chesto, you've written a story during the week which basically says out of the ashes of HSV came GMSV, which is the toy store end of the GM product line. We've got the big Silverado pickup truck already on Australian roads, converted over to right-hand drive. Right. Corvette has been confirmed. Now you've noticed a cheeky and almost under-the-radar trademark application that has big implications for that Corvette in Australia. Can you give us the top line on that, please?
You know what? I can and I shall. So you're right, GMSV stands for GM Special Vehicles or General Motors Special Vehicles, and it is the phoenix that rose from the ashes of Holden and HSV. And when those brands left Australia, we did kind of think we might get cut off from some of the cooler products, but of course the Silverado and the Corvette proved us wrong on that. But more excitingly, on July 13, GMSV and its GM overlords listed a sneaky little trademark application in Australia and New Zealand, actually, for the Corvette, and I'm going to differ from you here, James, the Corvette Z06 nameplate. So that's in the process of being approved in Australia at the moment. And the Z06, of course, is just one of the hypo variants of the Corvette. And it sounds very, very exciting. And it also sounds like we are going to get it in Australia and New Zealand.
Unreal. Now, Richard, what do you make of that?
It's too little too late, really. I mean, wouldn't it be ironic if it became a big thing in Australia just only a year or so after Holden, closed up shop? This is what Holden needed, about a year and a half ago. They needed a decent pickup truck. They needed a decent two-door sports car like this to take on Ford with its Mustang and its Ranger. I love it. I love my V8s. I also think that this is it, guys. This is the last chance that you will be able to have a full-blooded V8, because electric cars are coming. And I think this is we're in the death throes of fossil fuels. So I reckon roll around in the fossil fuels and enjoy it while you can.
It's an interesting point you make, because not only that, but it's not even turbocharged. This is going to be a naturally aspirated, from what we understand, 5.5 litre V8.
Yep.
And it's derived from the race car that's been already doing the rounds, the C8R. Mm. And for viewers on YouTube, we'll have a picture courtesy of Motor Trend, who managed to snap a shot of that engine in situ in the race car. Mm-hmm. So it's old school, it's very highly tuned, but it's an old school engine. So, yeah, it may well be the end of the line.
Absolutely.
Let me just expand on those specs a little bit there. So, yes, it's expected to be a 5.5-litre V8 under the hood. It should deliver around 450 kilowatts and scream to a 9,000 RPM redline. Now, to put that into perspective, the Corvette C8 that we're still waiting for should make 370 kilowatts and 640 newton metres, so a fair way under. And that thing is supposed to hit 100 kilometres an hour in 2.9 seconds. So safe to say the Z06 is going to be very, very fast.
Well, it's the law of diminishing returns, isn't it?
Well, that's right.
Whole bunch more horsepower into it, but it's how can it put it to the ground and make a faster time, that's is the thing when you're talking.
But I also do agree with you, Richard, because it's taken so long to get here, this damn thing, even the base model C8. that it is beginning to feel more and more like a dinosaur with every passing day. Like we are so quickly embracing electrification that by the time this thing finally gets here, it is going to feel like a relic.
Look, well, what are we looking at in terms of price? Do we think?
I can guess. Put it this way. The regular Corvette stretches from $145,000 to $160,000, right?
Yeah,
if you want to have a convertible version of either, you can add about, I think from memory, it's about $15,000 on top of that.
Yeah.
So $160,000 will top out for the regular Corvette. You would have to think a Z06 would be near enough the $200,000
mark.
That's fine. Well,
I think there's going to be a carbon edition, is there not, of the coupe to kind of lead things off, which is just under $190,000.
Yeah.
So there's a 2LT and a 3LT, and there's no difference, as I understand it, in performance.
In power, yeah.
The 2LT and 3LT is things like sportier seats and interior trims and all of that stuff, which affects the cost.
Yeah.
But for 200 grand, that's a lot of car. And considering that Lamborghini are asking double that for, you know, even something like along the entry lines of a Lamborghini, I reckon it's well worth it. It's a big American muscle car. It's a race car for the road. And like I said, you know, Europe's bringing in laws which will effectively ban petrol and diesel cars from, 2035?
Yeah.
Guys, you've got 15 years left, so...
Well, the thing that brings this car closer to those Italian exotics, Ferrari in particular, is the design of the engine. You know, you're talking about more power from a smaller capacity engine, and it's the arrangement. It's a flat plane crank, and that's what Ferrari has used in its V8s for some time. So where the conrods connect with the crank, they're 180 degrees opposed. So it gives you more power, but the engine's a bit rougher. Whereas in a cross-plane crank, you've got 90 degrees and the firing order changes and it's smoother. But you get this sound as well as the
power.
You get this soaring, screaming sound. And Mr. Pritchard will insert some audio and vision for those on YouTube. Chevy's put a teaser out there of what the engine sounds like, and you would swear you're listening to a Ferrari.
Do you know what you need, JC? You need a whiteboard so that you can actually draw the crank, the conrods in the background, like Larco in V8.
It's interesting because it does make the engine a little less civilized, but it also makes it more powerful. So it's not traditional muscle in that sense.
Yes.
Traditional would very much be a cross-plane, but it sounds incredible.
I just raise one annoying sticking point?
No car seats, no anchor points in the back.
No.
Is that the issue?
It's that this thing starts in the US
at
$60,000.
Yes.
US. It starts in Australia at $160,000 or whatever it was. What did I say? $140,000, $160,000? That's the issue with this car. When it was first announced, it was going to be this absolute cut price supercar, you know, that was going to be incredible bangs for very few bucks. Sure. But in Australia, it's not really that cheap. You know, we're nudging 200 plus for the car, or 200 for the carbon edition, 200 plus by the time you get it on the road. That's not as cheap as we were expecting.
Where does that extra cost come in?
Well, it's got to be made into a right-hand drive car for a start.
Yeah, and everyone's got to clip the ticket on the way through, and rightfully so. But it just means that it's not, you know, it's not quite as cost-effective as we were all kind of hyping it up to be initially.
That conversion is expensive. I remember when the Camaro was being converted from left-hand drive to right-hand drive. It was 100 hours of manpower, and that basically took the price from about $50,000 to about $80,000-$90,000. So it does, and especially the car, you know, like the Corvette, it's going to extrapolate that cost as well.
But does that make that car less palatable? I would argue that it probably does, to be honest. I think that's what killed the Camaro.
There should be a home kit that you just do it yourself.
Yeah, I don't
think it's that complicated. You know what I mean? Like a caterer, build it yourself at home.
I did a left-hand drive to right-hand drive conversion on my car.
Yeah, but that used a couple of old pulleys and a chain.
Pretty much.
Where you just had it going across the engine.
It was a 1951 Ford. And it's very easy to convert.
It was basically you sitting in the passenger seat making engine sounds with your mouth with you. But
we just got a right-hand drive dash off an Australian-built car and swapped it over. The only problem that we had was getting the steering column to clear the exhaust manifold, but that was fine. We just did a bit of shaving there. Yeah.
Right. So, well, did a bit of personal grooming whilst doing that?
Bit of manscaping. Yep. Bit of manscaping.
Interesting because with the, I mean, Chesto, you and Richard made the point that electric's coming. All of this seems like dinosaur territory. But with electric cars, the difference in the powertrain in those cars means that the left to right for steering wheels is going to be potentially far easier.
Yes.
In fact, you could have a model where you just move the wheel
within
the car across to the other side. So those kinds of things may free up availability on certain models in time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why has there never been a centre steering wheel?
Well, there has.
It has, yeah.
Has
there?
Yeah, McLaren F1.
Yes, but I mean, in a real car.
There have been others.
You have two seats either side of you. So and then worldwide.
Is that a concept, a mid-seat concept?
Yes.
I think, was it Scimitar? I think had three across the front. I don't know where the wheel was, but it has been done before.
Wouldn't that solve all the problems?
It's not super practical. Maybe. I know Winton was onto that.
Fast.
They had the Scimitar turbo.
That was like the Winton Centro.
Fantastic. Yes, that was a great model. Not a big seller, much like the Camaro.
I'm going to drag you back to Corvette for a moment because the other thing that kind of on the electric thing is that what an EV powertrain does is totally democratize the idea of acceleration, idea of performance.
Yeah.
It has forced us to totally reconsider what cut price performance looks like. And if anyone has ever driven the Tesla Model 3 performance, that is an unbelievable amount of straight line speed for really not
totally. A huge
money. So those things as well put cars like the Corvette into the crosshairs because, you know, what you're really paying for there is lightning quick acceleration. And frankly, that just doesn't cost as much as it used to.
Well, can I also point out that what an EV car does, it inserts a tube into your soul and it sucks out every bit of passion and enthusiasm out of the driving experience.
That's a great. I used to feel that way, Richie, but I've slowly come around to the idea of EV performance.
It's interesting. I mean, only moments ago, we've listened to that soaring engine noise from this V8, and it is really hairs on the back of the neck stuff. Ooh. That is just not a factor with an EV. However, to your point, Chesto, with the Model 3 performance, my threshold for a really fast car is when acceleration narrows your field of vision.
Yeah.
Where you plant your foot and bingo, your peripheral vision kind of disappears and all you can see is the vanishing point up ahead of you.
And just the blue and red flashing lights
in the rearview mirror.
In the rearview mirror,
That car does it. It is so breathtakingly quick.
That's another point there, Richie. You raised perfectly because I don't know, maybe I'm just getting old, right? But
one minute at a time.
Yeah.
But I absolutely lusted after cars like the Corvette and others. And look, I still do, don't get me wrong, but I have found now in Victoria and certainly more recently in Sydney where they've started removing signage for speed cameras, et cetera. When you get into one of those cars now, all I end up doing is like feathering the throttle and have my eyes glued to the speedometer the entire time. And talk about your soul leaving your body. That is a fairly awful driving experience.
It is. I mean, just take the number plates off and then you can drive as fast as you like. I mean, I'm not suggesting that. I'm not suggesting that at all.
That's a great idea.
As long as you're driving something understated, you know, like a Corvette.
Yeah, the only one in Australia. Yeah, well, they won't track you down.
We are still led to believe that the entry point Corvette, your standard 2LT or 3LT Corvette, will be here sometime this year. Whether or not COVID has thrown a spanner into those works remains to be seen. But this will be a 2023 model. Chesto, is that right? It would be announced or released in the States in 2022.
Yep.
So we wouldn't see it until a fair way into 2022 for sure. Well, is that fair?
If basic Corvette timing is anything to judge by, we won't see it in this country until about 2075. Actually, we could see it as early as the beginning of 2023,
Can I just ask as well, will the same Gronks who put a Chevy badge on their Commodore now put a Holden badge on their Corvette? because frankly, I hope you're happy now.
Well, time will tell. That'll be one to watch.
And we'll post that. And if you're watching this on YouTube, we'll post Richard's address. If you are one of those quoting quote grogs, please feel free to pop around.
Chesto, is it you that every time drives past my house honks?
Often, yeah.
Is that you?
But I just drive around honking.
And at night time, it's quieter. It's so you. Because at 11, about 11:30 at night, it goes, but during the day, it goes, boop, 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 boop.
But I like to feel like I'm in a ticker tape parade wherever I go. I'm honking.
Well, the last one is where the Chesto's driving the tuck truck on the night, and it's got La Cucaracha. Anyway, it could be great to hear what people make of this whole thing. Is it a dinosaur? Is it worth the money? Cheap muscle car, half-price exotic sports car.
Yeah.
Where do you sit? Is it relevant? Is electric going to make all of this seem foolish within 5 minutes? It would be great to get your feedback on this discussion.
But I would like to know, quite simply, excited, yes or no? Does it get the juices flowing or not?
Well, put it this way, Chesto. Part of the reason we're speaking about it is because your news story was top of the pops. You know, during the week, a lot of people clicked on the story. And that's why we thought it would be a good topic to discuss. So there's certainly an appetite out there to know more.
Yeah,
whether or not that translates into, you know, people actually buying the thing is another story, I suppose.
Time will tell, eh?
Time will tell. All right, well, we'll move on. Thank you. And we will move on to our garage. And, Richard, we'll start with you. Yes. The car that you've been driving, it's not a naturally aspirated V8. It's not derived from a racing car.
No.
You've been living with it for some time.
And I've just been slagging off electric vehicles, and I'm about to sing its praises. It's the Lexus UX. It means it's the smallest SUV that Lexus make. And it's the 250H, which is a hybrid version of it. And I've just stepped out of the 200, which is the straight petrol version of the same car. And now I'm in the hybrid version, and it makes so much more sense than a pure petrol version of this car, especially for what I do, which is mainly city driving. The fuel economy is excellent. It's teetering around about 4 liters per 100, which is excellent. The straight petrol was sort of doing double that. So there's a fuel saving to be had there. But it's what I love about it, most of it. It's practical even for its size, but it's comfortable. I've got two cars I'm testing at the moment that are sitting out the front of the house. There's the D-Max X-Terrain and there's the Lexus. And we've been taking the Lexus each time just because I love driving the D-Max because it's like driving a Tonka truck and it's fun. But if I just want to get in the car to go to the shops and I don't want any fuss, I just want to be comfortable.
Yeah.
I get straight into the Lexus and the seat heaters are on from before, so it knows that I want them on again. And it's just such a cushy little SUV.
Isn't that an interesting situation where often at the end of a comparison test, you say, oh, right, if it was your money, which one would you take home? But there's a real graphic example of, I've got to use this one day to day. What am I going to get into? And it's that car.
That's it.
Look, funny, isn't it? Especially when if you're on a comparo that involves like a freeway drive, often the car that technically wins the comparo is the car that nobody wants to drive home
in. Well, that's but I must say that in recent years, we've been leaving that window for people consuming the comparisons. We're trying to call out the attributes that are good in certain circumstances, and you can still make your own conclusion in terms of what suits your life and your world. So interesting though.
One of the things I like about it, just in terms of design, is that, I love the 50s cars, and this UX has actually got fins. So if you're watching on YouTube at the moment, you'll see some images that I took just the other day, where the taillights actually are finned, and they actually stick out quite far. And I think that's a really cool little design feature of, what is just an everyday shopping centre car.
Unreal. Now, question without notice, Richard. Mm. Do you know if the powertrain is the same as, say, Corolla or Prius or battery and motor and stuff? Is it common with other Lexus and Toyota product?
Yeah, of course it is. So, I mean, there are variations in, you go from the Kluger, which has got two motors on the front axle and one motor on the rear axle, and then you've got Camry, and then you've got Rav, and then you've got Corolla. And their setups are a little bit different depending on the car, but being a Lexus, it is a Toyota, so they use exactly the same hybrid systems. And, Toyota are the masters of it. They've been doing hybrids since 1997 when the Prius first came out. And you can really tell, you get into a hybrid from another car brand, you can see that they're just a little bit behind in terms of that seamless, you know, switch from motor to engine. So, yeah, no, it's been great.
4 litres is pretty great. You know, 4 litres per 100 is pretty great.
Absolutely. All right.
That's it for that one, Richard?
That's it for that
one. Thank you, Richie.
Very good. Very good. Now, Chesto, we will move to your good self. You've been in a Kia, and it starts with an S and ends with Nick. Tell us about it, please.
It is the Kia Stonic, which is the tiny bite-sized, came in a cereal box SUV from Kia. I'm going to start with fuel economy, actually, because I haven't been that impressed by it, and it's relevant to Richie. So I've been averaging 8.8, albeit in predominantly city driving. But for a car that tiny, when you think what Richie's getting out of his Lexus, and just for the viewers' sake, Richard and I live, I could pretty much pick up my Stonic, throw it, and hit Richie's head.
I can see Chesto. He's in his window. There he is. Hello, mate. Yes.
Back in the day, you used to share newspapers too, didn't you? That's right. You'd deliver and then you'd just run up the road.
Yeah, exactly. There's
no point getting two.
No. So my little tiny Kia is using about twice the fuel of Richie's Lexus at the moment. Look, it's not a terrible number, but it's not overly impressive. Now, the GT line is a top spec in the Stonic family. It's about 30-odd grand, and it is interesting because it is powered by the smallest and yet most powerful engine, a little 1-litre three-cylinder engine. Makes 74 kilowatts and 172 newton meters, which is more torque than the 1.4 liter petrol used in the lesser models. And I'm usually a really big fan of three-cylinder engines. I just find they're kind of fun and sort of roarty, and they make a cool noise. But I'm not a huge fan of this one, to be honest. Maybe it's something to do with the insulation surrounding it, but it just doesn't feel like a relaxed and calming drive experience. It feels a bit thrashy. You can hear everything working more than you perhaps like to. And as a result, it's probably not the smoothest drive experience ever. And it's one of those situations where I feel like you might actually be better off with the bigger but less powerful 1.4 might deliver a smoother drive experience, but I haven't driven it, so I can't swear to that on a stack of Bibles. But look, outside of that, it's Kia through and through. It's clever. I actually think, and I'll throw a photo of it up in just a moment, perhaps it's already there through the magic of the interwebs, but it is a pretty tough-looking little small SUV. Like, it's got an aggressive kind of muscular front end with this kind of cool grill design. So it's a cool-looking thing. It's clever package. It's got a lot of equipment for the money, and it's got a killer warranty. So, you know, if you're in the market for something in that size, it's probably not a bad one to look at, but I would at least drive the other engine combinations to see which one suits you.
That's a great idea. Great point.
Yep. I've driven the regular four cylinder, and that three cylinder is the drivetrain to get a powertrain to go for though, Testo.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's like compared to the, you know, the regular four cylinder, which it just feels so underpowered and so sluggish. You get into that three-cylinder, it's like, I'm in a race car. Like, it does feel completely different.
So it's just little highly strung triples with the turbo. They do surprise you, don't they?
Awesome. Like, I spent some time in a Puma recently that was really fun. Put a smile on my face every time I drove it. It was really fun and dynamic and roarty and loud and engaging. Yeah. I'm just not getting those same vibes from this one. Although some of that might be the fact that I haven't left my house in about 18 years.
You've just been driving it up and down the hallway, really, haven't you? To the kitchen, to the bathroom.
I've just been revving it out the front. So perhaps my goodwill is evaporated. I don't know.
That's actually how I learned to drive in my brother's car. Reverse it across the nature strip.
Yeah.
Right up the nature strip. Back up.
Anyway. I actually learned to drive manual in an old my mum's old Mitsubishi Colt in our little cul-de-sac driveway.
There you go.
Until I slipped the clutch accidentally and drove straight into the pylon that separated the garage.
Nice. And,
that was the end of my homemade.
How did you work your way around that? Did you come up with a quick kind of fix, a quick story to cover?
Because I should point out too, they were also, let's just say, they were unauthorized driving lessons from a man who was far too young. So it wasn't a good look across the board, mate.
Oh, your driving mentor. Okay, that's good. All done there, Chesto?
All done, mate. All done.
Super. All right. I'll just finish it off with Subaru Outback Touring. So it's a 2.5 litre petrol flat six, and talk about naturally aspirated. This one doesn't have a turbo, so it's 138 kilowatts, 245 newton meters. But that peak torque is at 3,400 RPM. So you get spoiled. You're used to it being about 1,500 or even less. This is 3,400. CVT, all-wheel drive, 47,790. So before you put it on the road. And the pluses for that car, and like you guys, for people overseas, Sydney, Melbourne, South Australia, as we record this, are in COVID lockdown. So there hasn't been enormous scope to drive it a long way, but I've found it really comfortable. It's on 18-inch rims, but it's still comfy. The high ground clearance gives it that SUV look and ability, actually, but it still drives like a car, which I like. It's nicely put together. It's built in Japan. It's obviously a quality object. It can now, in its latest iteration, tow 2 tonnes, where it was 1,500 before, so it's up 500 kegs, which is pretty good. Great safety. Subaru really does a terrific job on active and passive safety tech. It's loaded with that. And this touring model, at less than 50K, you get things like heated front and the rear outer seats are heated, which is really nice. LED headlights, the partial leather, auto tailgate, power seats, blah, blah, blah. And the dash layout is way better than the XV that I was in with that multi-dash tiered thing that Subaru hangs on to in some models. This is a much sleeker single screen, and it looks better. I haven't had a hell of a lot of chance to play with it. There's lots of cargo space. It's got a lot going for it. The couple of little niggles that I found, it's got that when you press the indicator, it's like an old school BMW. It's like an electric activation of the indicator. So if you're in a long bend and you want to turn the indicator off early, you can easily overreach and turn the left one on, and then you put the right one back on. And it just grinds my gears like a dodgy clutch, you know. I really hate that. But it's smooth, but it is missing that mid-range turbo punch. You know, you wait for it to – you get so spoiled by these turbos. The CVT's okay. I know others have had a bit of a go at it, but I'm not a CVT fan. But as they go, this one seems okay. And it has that very Subaru look, that kind of edgy, quiet, angular thing. It's not my cup of tea. But it's very characteristic. You're not going to miss it for anything else than a Subaru. And it's got the least impressive engine bay in the history of engine bays. There'll be a picture up for people on YouTube. It looks like something I would put together with bits and pieces at the back of the shed, fair dinkum.
But a flat six, though. I mean, like, is it a 911 just with the engine in the front, JC?
No. And, you know, horizontally opposed, some might say 180-degree V6. But it's looks, if you wanted to, if you're impressing your friends with your new Subaru Outback and you crack open the bonnet, they're not going to be. It just looks quite agricultural. It's funny. In the era of styling and designing everything such that your engine looks, you know, very smooth and cool.
This opens up a question. And I'd like to ask our listeners and viewers this. I mean, what do people think of those big Batman, you know, chest engine covers?
Oh, right.
Do people want to see its guts, or do you want to see a big bit of plastic over the engine bay?
It's a brand issue, isn't it, really? Mm. You know, because Subaru is owning up and saying, here it is.
This is an engine.
This is what it is.
Yes.
Whereas others may smooth it over and put a dressing on it, a styling to it, so that the brand comes off as a little more polished, a little more, you know, premium or whatever it might be. So, yeah, you either respect their honesty or just wonder at what they've kind of done under that hood.
Maybe it's designed so that you can get in there and do a few maintenance things, take a few, replace the water
pump. Easy access to the engine, that's the idea, right?
Yeah, it could be. But look, typically those plastic covers just pop off.
They do. Good frisbees. Yeah.
All right, well, there are my thoughts for what it's worth. Now, we'll move to feedback. And last week we were talking about the Jimny, basically saying, what is it about the Jimny that sends people into a frenzy? And we had a lot of great feedback. Graham Lang loves his new Jimny. He uses it around town, easy to park, fine on the motorway, carts his family of four around. So he uses it as a family truckster. And Hammer agreed, loves the Jimny, so glad it's selling well, et cetera. And David Burt, our mate Bertie, got very poetic. I think I'll read out verbatim what he had to say. One of the complaints of modern cars is the complexity and integration of everything. The whole connection with the energy driving the vehicle is lost. Yes. I think that's why the Jimny has appeal. The apparent simplicity, just throw in the whiff of a leaking rocker cover gasket or heater hose weep and you have the complete package. I think he's come very close to nailing it.
He's very right. And this is what you're going to see in the future. We're going to see a car come out that is just a steering wheel and wheels and an engine. I reckon it's going to be the equivalent of vinyl. It's just going to be an analog car.
Right.
And I reckon with the way things are going, all whiz-bang electric, there's going to be a certain type of buyer who just wants an old-school car. An actual Model T on the road.
That was a bit like computer software, isn't
it? My grandfather, you've ever sounded, Richard. Whiz-bang electric.
Everything will be chickity-boo. It's a bit like computer software, though, isn't it? Every piece of computer software we use, you know that there are 50,000 things that it can do that you never use.
Yeah,
well, that's it. You stick to the two or three or four that you need to use every day.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
It's overkill in a way.
Well, there's a lot of people with just regular analog watches, you know, when we've got phones and these days you can even get a digital watch.
Yes, you can with a calculator. I know I've seen that on your wrist too.
Oh, well, I have. I do the shopping list on it.
The Casio, I think. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Okay. So that was good. So Bertie summed it up really nicely. And then Richard Neal said, to think for less money than a Suzuki Jimny with bare bones options, you can get the 2021 Haval H6 4x4 with all the options.
Mm-hmm.
And Richard, I know that you were our person to go into battle with the Haval H6. What do you make of that in terms of a Jimny, and you can get this bigger vehicle and all of that?
Yeah, so the H6 is kind of the opposite to the Jimny because it doesn't feel bare bones at all. A H6 is really affordable. It's cost about $30,000, which undercuts like an MGHS by about $3,000 or $4,000 or $10,000, depending on which one you get. But it's loaded with technology. It's like a really plush cabin. It feels really refined. So you can do an affordable car that does look plush and feels good. So...
But that's it's like saying, it's funny people are spending so much on a 911 where for half the price you could buy a RAV4 hybrid. Like, that is not a fair comparison.
Price, tenth the price. Yeah.
Well, I mean, how much is the Jimny though? Because they retail for what, 30?
I think they started about 35, don't they?
Yeah. So you can get a HS Premium, which is the entry grade H6. For about $30,990.
Right.
Yes, but again, that's like saying, you know, people are spending $800 on a bottle of Grange. Don't they know you can buy a box of wine for $10?
Or a goon bag for $5.
The H6 is great. It's great. It's really good.
Graham Lang, you know, carting his family of four around in his Jimny. So, he's someone that you could say, but you could have the Haval H6.
There's nothing wrong with the Haval. I'm not saying that. But people aren't buying the Jimny because
it's safe. They're not buying because it's
true.
Buying it because it's got a certain cool factor that the others we don't have.
I do like the Jimny. I think they're awesome. I like to drive on Suzuki's. But that's a story for another day. No, I think it's cute, but I think there's a bit of nostalgia going on there.
Now, as you were doing your learning, Richard, I'm sure spare parts sales at Suzuki dealers around your area went through the roof.
Absolutely. We had a Suzuki Vitara and hot pink cat footprints across the bonnet. Mum got those decals. So
that was when you painted the cat.
That was right, and it walked across the bonnet. So it was embarrassing enough with L plates on a Suzuki Vitara, let alone with these decals.
Just a moment here, just in the interest of getting everything accurate, the Suzuki Jimny starts at $28,490 for the
main. Oh, does it? Okay.
Yep.
$29,990 for the auto.
Fine. Thank you, Chesto.
I don't think it's good value. Not for that. It should be less. It should be $19,990. How many NCAP stars did it have? What do you get with it? It's a tiny car.
It's what the market, it's market forces there, and people are lining up to buy it.
Yeah,
there's a queue out the door, so much so they've just introduced a new cheaper model to try and alleviate some of the wait times.
In Europe, I think it was it's a commercial vehicle because they took the rear seats out. But whether that one comes here, we'll see.
Ooh, that'd be good.
That was mainly around emissions.
I think there's about a year's waiting list on the Jimny at the moment, isn't there? So it's proven popular somewhere. But I think it's a cool. This is just me ranting for a moment, but I've had this rant before. Mm. Bear with me. I think it's a cool car, the Jimny. I get the appeal. It's funky. It's retro. It is just like oozes a certain cool factor. And as you say, it sort of harks back to a simpler day of motoring. But mate, if you are buying a Jimny and you live in the city and you're not actually into off-roading anywhere, then I think you're mad, because it is a tough car to live with in town.
Like, well, I remember when you were testing yours, Chester, you hated it.
Yeah. I hate it in the city. I understood it's a
okay,
deal.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was like the old Wrangler, which used to drive like a house brick. And yeah. I used to live in Newtown and Erskineville. I'd see people living in this tiny car, this tiny street story with this massive Wrangler. And every time you went around the corner, it was like Austin Powers scene.
Yes.
It's just madness to me. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, I'll put you in touch with Graham Lang, who happily, you know, ferries his family of four around in his.
I reckon Graham goes off-roading. Graham, do you go off-roading? Tell us. I think you do some off-roading. That's got to be part of it.
Okay. Yeah, that's a fair question. Well, I like Graham. In terms of other variants, Pora the More Exploradora says, rather than a five-door, because there's a five-door in the works, Jimny, I'd rather see a Rubicon kind of version that comes from the factory with lift, better suspension, rock sliders, bigger axles, steel rims, 30-inch tyres, and a lower gear ratio.
Now, that's something to get behind.
That would be something.
Yeah. What, the Jimny? A Jimny?
Yeah, like a full-on tough Jimny.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Exactly. And there are a couple out there, actually, aftermarket sort of accessorized Jimnys that look amazing. You're not sure what it does to your warranty.
He wants it out of the factory with full warranty and all of that.
Including one motoring journo who's turned his into a sort of mini G-Wagon.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. All right, well,
which is actually a bit like that meme where you say, you know, ordered online and this turned up, ordered a G-Wagon online. It's not quite the same.
That's right.
Do you know, I reckon Jimnys are going to be classics. Like I mean, they already are, but I think if you're talking about future classic cars, I reckon that current generation Jimny is going to be,
yeah.
Be
all right, so it's collectible. Like drain the fluids, have it hermetically sealed, put it away, open it up again in 25 years.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, that pine lime splice color one.
Well, right.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's an action plan right there.
Yeah.
Remus King of Rome 5 says, Jimny no, Lada Niva yes. Mm. So you guys are probably familiar with the Lada Niva. Dave Birdie came in with the Peter Brock special, and I've got to correct Birdie there because it was actually a Lada Samara Deluxe by Brock. So when Peter Brock was kind of financially in a tough spot, having split with Holden, and he was going off the rails a little bit in terms of his devotion to certain things.
He had only fans, didn't he, at one point?
He didn't. He needed some throughput in the factory, and Lada was in the Australian market, so he did a Brock Lada Samara. And I'm old enough to have driven that as a new car, as a journo. And if people ask me, what is a truly, you know, there aren't any bad cars anymore. One of the ones I go back to is that. It sort of disassembled itself as you drove it. Even though it had gone over it and spanned everything and made sure that everything was as tight as it could be, it was determined to come apart. Yeah. Parts of the car just detached as you were driving. It was terrible. But Remus came back at Birdie and said, I fell in love with the Niva as a young man in the 70s. It never went away. Never owned one, though. Russian friends warned me off.
So. Yeah, I had a mate who had one, and the number of times I got phone calls from him asking him to pick him up because he'd broken down was basically his car was my car, because I was constantly driving him to mechanics workshops to get it fixed.
Yeah. Well, now, changing the subject, because we did touch on electric vehicles, and just to finish off the feedback, Grundon 74, I think the next evolution for EVs is auto charging, hashtag, so branding this. So Grudland 74 now owns auto charging. Mm-hmm. Basically, you get home and park over a strip or a mat and your EV starts charging. And he's absolutely right. That is the next drive. So he's possibly a little late to the party.
Yes.
But TGV, the Very Fast Train, exposed his technical knowledge here by coming back at Grudland and saying, most homes don't have 100 amp supply, let alone the ability for 7.2 kilowatt hour charge converter. And what happens if you have, let's say, three vehicles that are all battery electric? Good luck trying to charge all three. Simply put, the current infrastructure is not there right now and probably never will be.
The solution
is hydrogen, but until hydrogen can be made from a renewable source and also a new compression method found for safety, it's also way off. Internal combustion will be around here for a while to come. And even though that is a bad thing, it's sadly the right thing. What do you guys make of that?
Oh, geez.
Two things I'd say. One about the driving, the charging mats. Like, so the premium brands are doing it at the moment and yep. have either launched it overseas or are getting very close to it. So brands like Audi, for example. I don't really get the appeal of that. I don't find the idea of plugging something in all that time consuming.
Well, it is yeah. identifying the plug-in as a pain point.
Yeah.
And trying to eradicate that. But yeah, people are just reluctant to do it because it's a pain in the backside.
I guess I just don't reckon, because we spend so much time refueling cars, I just don't see that action as that much of a pain point. That's my personal view. But in answer to his question, look, I agree. I think long-term green hydrogen certainly makes the most sense as a as a fuel. If we could overnight, for example, switch Australia's petrol stations to hydrogen stations, then it would be the most seamless transfer to a new technology possibly in the history of the world. So that does make sense, but I do feel like it is somewhere
way off. I mean, totally, because with a hydrogen electric, you know, a fuel cell vehicle, you've got that zero emissions tailpipe emissions output, and you don't have to carry a massive battery.
No.
The tank for hydrogen in a fuel cell car is tiny. So you've got that lighter weight with all of that fuel, and you can just plug in and fuel it up. And in fact, our own Tom White, who looks after our EV guide, is seeing it more as your heavy vehicle solution. So
most people are
seeing it like a diesel replacement for heavy trucking and all that as well.
Yeah, because the
one thing the battery electric can't solve is long distance freight, and that's where hydrogen could easily fill that void. There's two counter arguments at play. One is which that everybody has access to their own power station. Everybody has a power point at home they can put their car into, so that infrastructure already exists. But the counter to that is that for a country like Australia, and if you want to do properly long distance driving, hydrogen really is the only answer. It takes about 5 minutes to refuel a tank, and you'll get in most vehicles, you get another 600 or 700 km in range, stop 700 km later and refuel again. So essentially it means you could drive from our houses in Sydney to Brisbane, a 10-hour drive, and stop for 5 minutes along the way, which you would be stopping for anyway, right?
Yeah.
So long distance, it does. My argument is that it does seem to make the most sense.
It absolutely does. Stopping it
unless you have powerful internal organs like Richard, which means you don't have to stop ever.
I've held on for 48 hours once, and that was during a sort of a transcontinental crossing.
Amazing. It was in the Guinness Book, I think, for a while.
It was. Well, then that's I had a Guinness Book on me. And that was it. It was all over it, actually, all over the Guinness Book of Records.
Let's move on.
Lucky there's a lot of pages. That's all I can say.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's a very interesting one. Hydrogen to me seems to have huge potential, but
it does.
You know, you think about the fact that Honda has cancelled the Clarity. It was on sale in the US and other markets, and they've said, nah, we've had enough. And so they've stopped producing the Clarity.
Yeah, but what does Honda know? You know?
It feels like a bit of a turning point on hydrogen. Will it go one way or the other right now?
Can I raise one more small point on hydrogen?
Yeah.
The other beautiful
thing. Are you working for the Hydrogen Board of Australia?
No.
You are.
I'm fascinated by this because Australia really has an opportunity to become like a Saudi Arabia of hydrogen production. We could be an absolute world leader in producing.
Where is it, though? Where do you get the hydrogen from, Chester?
So generally speaking, there's the green and the non-green way of making it. So predominantly most of hydrogen at the moment is produced by gas, which is a very inefficient in terms of emissions way of producing hydrogen. But you can also draw it from any form of electricity, including solar. So the argument is that if you build these vast solar farms, some of which already exist, and convert them into hydrogen manufacturing facilities, then you could be a world leader in the export of green hydrogen. Yeah. Mm. Anyway. This message brought to you by Australia's Hydrogen.
You know, on that subject, you know what I love is the pictures I've seen of a cow cocky who's got the farm and he's got a few sheep grazing among the solar panels and the wind turbines.
Yes.
So turning their plot into a triple threat.
Yes.
And I saw that same story, James. He was arguing actually that it's better for the grass because the solar panels attract dew and water overnight, which then feeds down into the grass.
Unreal.
What about covering the sheep with solar panels?
Solar panels.
Electric sheep. Do farmers dream of electric sheep?
Well, what about some kind of genetic fix where they actually grow wool that is able to generate electricity?
Yeah.
That's amazing. And you don't even have to feed them.
Mate, forget sheep. What about cars being fitted with solar panels? Does that feel like a bit
surface,
of
surface area is not big enough? Unless a big solar array folded out of the top of your
But you know, like Hyundai's doing it. Hyundai has cars with solar panel roofs, etc. But I just don't see the purpose there. It sounds like a lot of expense, but not a lot of power.
I don't think that's right. I think the photovoltaic cells or whatever, people out there will know more than I do for sure. Just don't have enough grant to be able to make much of an impact
on
a car's battery, you know, electric car battery.
This has been deep. Thank you for the great everything. Advice.
All right. Well, look, it's a good point to say that we've reached
the end. Are we finished? Line. Are we out of here?
Yeah, and I want to say thank you, Chesto. Right. Thank you, Chesto, and thank you, Richard.
Thank you. Thank you.
And thanks to our big kahuna, snuggler in residence and director of salad dressings, Mr. Pritchard, for his supreme handiwork on the sliders and buttons. Today, he's wearing a T-shirt saying, skilled enough to take it apart, patient enough to put it back together, and smart enough to hide the extra parts when I'm done. he's also wearing French fry pants and DIY IKEA boots. Amazing.
Yeah, nice.
Jump into the conversation, Cars Guides on Facebook and Instagram, or email us at comments@carsguide.com.au. Apple Podcast listeners, please take a moment to rate and review the show. 5 stars would be great.
Yes.
If not, let us have it. As we always say, it's okay to learn. If you enjoyed the episode, make sure you subscribe to the Cars Guide YouTube channel so you can stay on top of all our latest content. But before we go, it was mentioned a few times during today's podcast, but let me put it on the record. I do not like synthetic leather trim in cars, and that's vinyl.
Oh, dear Lord.